Okay, thank you again. This is quite a project. It does send you back to the books. And once again, I'm going to use my go-to method. But my name is Leslie Gray. I am an alcoholic. And so therefore, I qualify to speak at an AA meeting. And in order to speak at this meeting, it requires 30 years of continuous sobriety. And so I've had my last drink February 23rd, 1981. So I qualify on that score. And I say that every week because who knows who was here or not here or picks up, you know, what stray disc somewhere. But it's important to qualify and to understand what brings us together. So anyway, last week we talked about the fourth step and kind of wind it up with the idea that by doing a fourth step, we're just beginning to get a good look at who we are, what makes us tick, what our defects are, what our resentments and fears and all of those things. But just a beginning. So, you know, it doesn't need to be perfect, but it does need to be done. So I believe this anyway, so I'll share this thought again. To take a fourth and fifth step in my mind is truly an exercise in faith and humility and honesty and in courage. It takes a lot of sand to take a hard look at ourselves, put it down in writing, and share it with another human being. It just does. It's not easy. I mean, that's why we drank, you know, to hide from all of that stuff. So to kind of take ourselves by the hand and walk forward and do the steps, it is. So I also want to note that, you know, the chapter of the big book that talks about doing the fifth step is titled Into Action. And action is what our program's about. And I heard this in a lead, so I'll spit it back to you. It's not into thinking. It's not into pondering. It's not into wishing. It's into action. That means we have to do something. If we want to continue in recovery and work a program, we need to take the action. So, you know, why would we do a fifth step anyway? I mean, we have this all on paper. You know, the first reason is that, we carry our defects that we drank on. We carry them with us, our guilt, our shame, all of it. You know, we drink. The main reason that we do a fifth step is to walk around and keep holding on to that stuff is we're at huge risk of drinking again. And so I want to mention this to my favorite book again. You know, if you've been here, you know I use it and you know I love it. But if you haven't been, this is my old As Bill Sees It, The AA Way of Life. I got this one in 1981, and that's why it is so ripped up, taped together, yellow, all of it. But at page 17, there is a grapevine note in As Bill Sees It from August 1961, and it says this, that the deception of others is nearly always rooted in the deception of ourselves. And I kind of talked about that with the first step as well, but it really, you know, things connect up. I had a lie to myself every time I took a drink. And I took a drink because I had to stuff a lot of the stuff I didn't like about me and numb myself out from it. But, and at page 83 of why do we do this? We can't live alone with our problems. And there is a grapevine note again. There's there in that part. It talks about the 12 12 and 12, but the grapevine thing talks about we cannot wholly rely on friends to solve all our difficulties. A good advisor will never do all of our thinking for us. He knows that each final choice must be ours. He will therefore help to eliminate fear, expediency, and self-deception, so enabling us to make choices which are loving, wise, and honest. And I read that in this context because to me, you know, to talk to someone in a fifth step helps me get my thoughts straight. To talk to a sponsor in a fourth step helps me get my thoughts straight, and to air it out helps me get my thoughts straight. And the last thing I want to share out of the As Bill Sees It is it talks about talking and reduces the shame, you know, to just put things to air, put things out in the light of day. Again and again, I've found that, you know, when it's rattling around in my head, it seems so big and so awful and so insoluble. But when I say it in the light of day and it hits the oxygen, then it seems a little different. But this is from a 1957 letter. And these letters are Bill Wilson letters, where Bill says, "We reacted more strongly to frustrations than normal people. By reliving these episodes and discussing them in strict confidence with somebody else, we can reduce their size and therefore their potency in the unconscious." So we're kind of, you know, chasing some of them boogeymen away by sharing it. The big book also covers why in the 12 and 12. It kind of boils down to loneliness. The 12 and 12 tells us that we cannot live alone with our pressing problems and character defects. And we struggled in isolation. I mean, I did. I thought I was different. I thought my feelings were so awful that I drank. It's a false belief. You know, alcoholism is a lonely thing, and we're tormented by it. We feel alone. I felt alone. I felt that I was unique. I felt that I didn't fit in. There's, and this is what I do want to read out of the 12 and 12. Ugh. At page 57. And I'm gonna skip a few, but anyway, it talks about almost without exception, alcoholics are tortured by loneliness. Even before our drinking got bad and people began to cut us off, nearly all of us suffered the feeling that we didn't quite belong. There was always that mysterious barrier that we could neither surmount nor understand. And I can tell you I had that. I felt that. Sometimes I still feel that. I feel, you know, those things, they creep up. But today I have a program to help me walk through that and to understand that every feeling I have isn't a fact. But in my alcoholism, I certainly felt that. And I drank on it often, daily. But the best reason to take a fifth step, you know, part of it is ending that awful isolation and that awful feeling of aloneness, is that we might drink again. And the 12 and 12 book talks about, you know, few muddle attitudes have caused us more trouble than holding back on step 5. Some people are unable to stay sober at all. Others will relapse periodically until they really clean house. Even AA old-timers, sober for years, often pay dearly for skimping this step. They will tell us how they tried to carry the load alone, how much they suffered of irritability, anxiety, remorse, and depression. Everyone had to confess their own, meaning their own defects and problems. The big book talks about why we do this step. And it says that the best reason if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives, trying to avoid this humbling experience. And having persevered in the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is they never completed their house cleaning. I mean, we have to, you know, if I'm going to live sober and not be numb, I have to deal with my crap. And the way to deal with the crap laid out in the big book in the 12 and 12 is to do this to do these inventories and to talk about it, to let someone finally see what's rattling around in my head and my heart. The big book talks about, you know, some of the stuff we carry, and it talks about the inconsistency that we have as alcoholics. And I know I had two faces, at least two faces, in my act of addiction. You know, the face I wanted you to see, the face that really was, the face I was afraid was there, you know, and then all the drama. But coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension. That makes for more drinking. That's me. That's me. You know, that awful dance. We must be entirely honest with somebody, if we expect to live long or happily in this world. And so we have to get on with it. You know, the opposite of doing that, of holding on to that isolation and maybe drinking, is to acknowledge our common humanity, you know, our common problem. I mean, we talk about it all the time, every meeting in the preamble, if we listen, you know, we're a group of men and women who solve our common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. That means we all have something in common. To drink for me is to be isolated. You know, to be sober is to be here with you. Or whatever other use, or anywhere, you know, in any location, because we have that in common. I'm going to go back to his Bill C's. I did things a little bit differently, but he talks about, and I got sober on this stuff, so that's really all I have to share. But in a letter, 1946, Bill Wilson talks about, he says this: "We recovered alcoholics are not so much brothers in virtue as we are brothers in our defects and our common strivings to overcome them." So that kind of made it okay. You know, it's a community. You know, we're not all, you know, they used to say we're all here because we're not all there. I don't know if they still say that. Do they still say that? But I've heard it a million times. We're all here because we're not all there. You know, and I know when I come into an AA room, it's a place I know you all get me, and I don't have to say a word beyond I'm an alcoholic. And that tells you a whole lot of stuff about me with saying just a few words, you know. So we've got a whole lot of common experience, thoughts and feelings and understanding. And lastly, Bill Wilson in a letter says that from 1952, "My observation is that some people can get by with a certain amount of postponement, but few can live without outright rebellion." So, you know, sooner or later, we got to do it. Sooner or later, I had to do it. I had to do it sooner rather than later. That's my experience with it. My sponsor did tell me that that's the step, you know, 4 and 5 is what separates the women from the girls. It separates the people who are going to stay sober and live reasonably well and okay, and those who are going to drink or just be a mess in their dryness. You know, what's worse than a dry drunk? I don't understand how people even hold that stuff, but anyway. We live in shame. We live in confusion. I did. I lived in remorse. And last week I talked a little bit about that period after that first year glow wears off, you know, the whole I'm sober and it's spring and all of that. The second year is tough. It was tough for me. And the years from 2 to 5 is a lot of, this is where this growing took place for me. But, you know, now, once I wasn't numb anymore, what I found out, I was stuck with myself. And so are you. We're stuck with ourselves, and we don't have our medicine to make it all better anymore or to take our mind off it. So the choice is either to get wasted or do something about it. Those are the only two choices that there are. I want to go back page 55. I mark all these pages. But reminding us that we can't live alone with these defects. I also want to go back. I said in the first step, my favorite big book story when I was getting sober, and I'll repeat, I did not go to rehab. I did not go to detox. I went to work. I worked in a hospital. I worked night shift. Every time the phone rang, I jumped out of my skin just about. I mean, it was just, I couldn't figure out what else to do except go to meetings, don't drink, and go to work. And it's kind of a blur. But anyway, I read the big book, and the story that I settled on, there's a personal story that fits everybody if you look for it, and mine was Freedom from Bondage, and that woman, her story spoke to me, and I would read the story again and again, and I want to circle back to it a little bit, you know, and this is, I was told that, well, let me tell you what she said first. In the Freedom from Bondage, she said, they suggested that I study the AA book and try to take the 12 steps according to the explanation in the book. For it was their opinion that the application of these principles in our daily lives will get us sober and keep us sober. And she said, goes on to say, I believe this. And I believe, too, that it is equally impossible to practice these principles to the best of our ability one day at a time and still drink, for I don't think the two things are compatible. And I think that's true as well. I mean, what could be more torturesome than drinking and trying to do this stuff? They say AA ruins our drinking because we get all this stuff and then we start to know how full of shit it really is. You know, the stuff we tell ourselves, the lies we tell ourselves. My sponsor used to tell me, she would say, Leslie, you have a problem. She said, and your problem has two possible solutions. She would tell me, one solution is to drink yourself into oblivion as often as possible until you die. And the other solution is to put down your drink, work the program, and live. Live a life that you can be happy and proud of. Happy with and proud of. And I think that's what, when I read this Freedom from Bondage woman and her opinion, kind of that's what I see. You know, it's see, if I do this, I can live. If I don't, I won't. It's this or it's that. It's the lady or the tiger. It's life or it's death. I don't think it can be said often enough that our disease is a life and death thing. And that it upsets me, like casualness of, you know, the relapse is part of recovery and blah, blah, blah. And to me, it's playing with my life. Our disease kills. People who don't find their way in here die. And so, we do this stuff that makes me uncomfortable, because being uncomfortable is better than being dead or having no brain or God knows what else, you know, might be the fate that comes to me. So the bottom line is we have to be fully honest with someone. And I want to add what, you know, the appropriate level of self-disclosure or the distribution of it. My sponsor always, how she would tell me was, you need to be completely honest with somebody. That doesn't mean you need to put all your dirty laundry out in the street for everybody to see. Okay, so, you know, we can be appropriate and maintain some decorum, but somewhere along the line, I have to tell somebody everything about me. Just one trustworthy someone. And so to choose a person who is to hear this step, it's important that the book tells us that we need to find a trustworthy person, someone who's going to understand us, someone who is going to support our effort to get sober, you know, who understands to an extent what we're doing, why we're doing it, and, you know, is, yes, they're with us, and someone who's not going to be affected by anything we tell, because it's just unfair to, you know, dump a load on someone who may have been harmed, and, you know, we don't want to cause any harm, any further harm, let's say, than we already have. So, you know, people who have you, I've heard fifth steps, I gave my first, you know, people give fifth steps to sponsors, trusted sober people. The book, I mean, and remember in the book, it was written in the 30s, in the 1930s, and there just weren't as many of us as there are now. But it does mention a clergy person, your doctor, someone who you can trust their discretion, trust their judgment, trust their goodwill, and who understands where you're going with this. The big book lays that all out in the Into Action. The result of all that is peace of mind. I said it several, I'll say it again. I don't know how people carry this stuff and don't drink, you know, just to leave that. I couldn't, because all that stuff was why I drank. That's what I was pouring the medication on. I had to get rid of it. The big book talks about, First of all, the big book says the person that we give this to should realize we are engaged upon a life and death errand. And so again, the book repeatedly talks about the fatal nature of our illness and that this is life and death stuff. You know, that if we want to live, you know, just like Arnold, come with me if you want to live. And that's how this is. That's how this is. And it talks about we pocket our pride, but the reward is once, and this is according to the book, and then I'll tell you what happened to me, okay? But according to the book, once we have taken this step with holding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. I spent a lot of time reading the big book and crying, seriously, in the first couple of years of my recovery, and sometimes I still can, because it's really powerful, life-altering, life-giving stuff. But when I took my fifth step, I spent the time working, you know, writing a fourth with my sponsor, and I gave her my fifth step, and we talked, and I shared with as much honesty and candor as I was capable of at that time. We met in her home, and we talked for hours, and I came away from that meeting feeling better, feeling like I'd gain a lot of understanding into who I was, what I was about, how I ticked, what was wrong with me, what was right with me, what I needed to look out for, what I needed to do going forward. But, that wasn't quite enough for me, and this is only for me, and I share this in case it's, you know, maybe you're like me, but anyway, I grew up Catholic, and you know, as much of a drunk as I was, there's always that little bit of a Catholic girl that was still alive and well in me, and I wasn't right until I gave my fifth step again to a priest. I went to St. Paul's Monastery in Southside. I got sober in Pittsburgh. I forgot to mention that this week, but the priests at St. Paul's Monastery in Pittsburgh were great friends of the program and hosted AA retreats, and some of them were us, and it was a very welcoming place. But my inner Catholic kid needed absolution, and I gave my fifth step again to Father Ben, who is now going on to his reward, and then I felt that absolution. I needed that. You may not, but if you do, that's okay, and go find it. You know, because the point is to feel better and to get that poison out of our system. And when I left St. Paul's Monastery, it was just, I felt when it clicked. The stuff they described, that spiritual feeling. I felt like, I called my sponsor and she said, "How do you feel?" And I remember, I said, "I feel like a pimple that's been popped. Like all the bad stuff, it just, you know, all the pus came out." I'm sorry for the grossness of my example, but that's the truth. That's what I told her, and that's what I felt like. Finally, the bad infection was on its way out. You know, I had to open it up. She used to tell me a lot about some of our stuff. It all has to come out. She would tell me sometimes it has to come, it comes out like shrapnel and it might hurt, but it has to come out because that's part of the healing. You know, the bad stuff has to come out. So I guess the last thing I'm going to just close with, I'll get you with one last quote, okay, out of the 12 and 12. It says, "That feeling of being at one with God and man, this emerging from isolation through the open and honest sharing of our terrible burden of guilt, brings us to a resting place where we may prepare ourselves for the following steps toward a full and meaningful sobriety." Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. That brings us to the question and answer portion. Does anybody have any questions for Leslie?
I've covered it so completely.
Thanks, Leslie. That was a very good message about the fifth step. On the 12 and 12, it says here, "The practice of admitting one's defects to another person is, of course, very ancient. It has been validated in every century and is characterized the lives of all spiritual, centered, and truly religious people." When I read that, because I had never thought of it that way until I read that. I was like, oh. Then I started thinking. But the point that I have, it's like two questions, but the first one is, you know, I've been around a little bit now, and it hasn't changed that I've seen that the people that are coming in and putting off doing the fourth and fifth step, and my mind is telling me that it seems like it's human nature not to tell somebody that you know, like your sponsor, that garbage. And I remember I went to counseling in early sobriety too, and you know, I felt I could tell him everything, and he was a recovering counselor. But I don't know what the stigma is about. It's still alive and well today with people putting that off because they don't want to tell my sponsor or a sponsor, your sponsor, that garbage that you have in your head. Just wonder if you have any insight on what your thoughts are about that, because a lot of people that I know might disagree with you that you got to do it with your sponsor, you know.
Well, I didn't say you have to do it with your sponsor.
I know you did.
The big book doesn't say you have to do it with your sponsor. It suggests that you do it with a person who is trustworthy, who will maintain a confidence, who will understand what your purpose and your goal in doing this is, and who will support you, who is supportive of you, and who won't be affected by anything. It doesn't say anything about, talking to your sponsor. Many people do. But you got to believe that your confidence is going to be kept. That's important. I've heard Fifth Steps. I wouldn't tell anything about anybody. But, I mean, I'm a lawyer by profession, and maintaining a confidence is something I'm very used to and comfortable with, and I respect that. And I wouldn't want my confidence broken. The book talks about, some of it's an excuse. Some of people don't want to look at themselves, I think. To me, I couldn't keep carrying it. I don't know how people walk around holding on to that stuff. It would have driven me nuts. It was starting to drive me nuts. It was making me uncomfortable. I didn't get sober to be miserable. To me, it just doesn't make any sense to hold on to the stuff that I drank on when I have an opportunity to get rid of it and there's a method. But no, it doesn't need to be a sponsor. And I didn't feel complete absolution until I talked to the priest. And the priest is bound by confidentiality, as a religious vocation. So I felt safe with my sponsor. It wasn't a matter of lack of safety. It was just, I needed the absolution, and she was not a priest and couldn't give me absolution. She gave me a ton of insight, and I have no doubt of the confidentiality and her good faith. So I hope that's helpful to you.
Well, I just wanted to put it on there for people that are listening, because I have been able to work through it.
It's important to be thoroughly honest, and I mean, to do so, it's just like holding on to the infection, holding on to the poison in me that I was trying to wash away with booze. I don't know, but people fail because of that.
Yeah.
And I mean, the books go on at some length about ego says I'm already better, or pride says I don't need to look at that, or why do I have to tell somebody? Why we have to tell somebody is that it's the surest confirmation that we've admitted it to God and ourselves, is to say it out loud to another human being. So it's kind of just a matter of evidence.
Yeah.
But. And also, I believe that to stuff kept in my head is not necessarily the most sound and productive. Another thing they used to say is if I stay alone with my thoughts, or I try to think things through without talking to somebody, all I have is one a-hole talking to another. And perhaps they should still say that. I don't hear that much anymore either. But I need to share. I need to let this stuff out. And I don't know how many times a naughty problem, not a fifth step, but just some naughty problem, when I put it to words and say it, it almost starts to solve itself. It's like, whoa, that was nuts. Why are you fretting about that? It really sounds stupid now that you say it out loud. But that's the kind of stuff that I could just, drink on and make myself miserable on. So hopefully that's helpful to those in listening on record.
Yeah. And did you tell us your sobriety date tonight?
Yes, I did. February 23rd, 1981. I was 26 when I fell into the arms of AA, as I heard that in a lead, because most things I know that's smart I heard in somebody's lead, or talking to in a meeting, or at some AA retreat or other. But it was the nicest way I've ever heard it put, was I fell into the arms of AA, and thankfully you were all there to catch me and start telling me, what I needed to do if I wanted to live. You have a question, Jack?
I do, Leslie. Thanks again for sharing with us. I remember a guy telling me at the Straight Arrow meeting that he had this step all figured out. He was going to find somebody who didn't speak English, and he was going to share his step with that guy. Something about that didn't seem quite right. But my question is this. When you're working with somebody who might be dragging their feet about sharing their fourth step, what are some of the things you might do in terms of like trying to motivate them, or their timelines that you might try to follow, things like that? What do you do to sort of help folks along?
How long do you want to suffer? You know, how long do you want that bad food in your belly before you get it out? It's really, I can't motivate anyone except if maybe seeing what I do or, you know, using my experience provides you with some motivation. But I can give any, you know, we can't give anybody motivation. We have to find that ourselves somewhere. We have to surrender. And if someone is that foot dragging, if they want to be in pain, then maybe they need to go back a bit to some other step. But to me, the bottom line is, you know, how well do you want to feel? How sick do you want to stay? How long do you want to be messed up in your head? How long do you want to be tormented with those feelings? How long you want to maintain a higher risk of picking up a drink? You sure you don't really want to drink? Because that's, I mean, to me, it's like real clear. That's how it was put to me. It's like this or it's that. It's life or it's death. It's happy recovery or it's an alcoholic destruction. You know, we all know the end points of alcoholism, don't we? Right? Jail, institution, death. That's it. That's the only three roads, the only three possible outcomes if we continue to drink. The only way that we're okay, and if that's not motivation enough, I don't know what else I can give someone except to lay out what the truth of it is, of what our disease is, and hope that they want to be well to go forward and to maybe explain that... share my experience. To trust the process and find someone that you're okay talking with, who you can trust. And I found not one but two, you know, my sponsor and Father Ben. And they were two very different conversations, but I needed both. I needed to put the two together. So hopefully that's of some help to you.
Jerry Riblett, alcoholic.
Hi, Jerry.
I guess I have more of a statement than I do a question. I did the steps with my sponsor. I was my first year in the program, and we did the fifth step, and I couldn't be completely honest with him. And there's just something I couldn't tell him. I didn't know what he would think of me, and so I did. And later on, I was at a retreat. And I asked the priest if I could do the fifth step, and he said yes. And I explained to him, I was honest with him, and I explained to him what had happened. And he says, I can't even count the amount of people that come to me with the same thing. And he says, it's good that you got it all out. He says, later on, he says, you're going to think that this is not important anymore. And he was right. Later on, after about a year or two, I went back to my sponsor and I told him what had happened and that. And he said, and I remember him saying, if you were paying attention, he says, I didn't ask you if there was anything else that you actually kept back or wanted to tell me. He says, because I didn't want you to lie. And he was right. But I went back to him later and told him, today it was nothing. It doesn't bother me. I've forgiven myself. I ask God to forgive me. But a lot of people, or go through that, where they're not completely honest with their sponsor. So.
I thank you. That's a thank you for sharing that story. I mean, it's true. It's just like they say in the book, and you have to get everything out and whatever it takes. And I needed that priest, and you needed. It sounded like it was a priest or a clergy person, and that safety level. But again, we don't need to put all of our stuff out in front of everybody, but we need to be completely honest with somebody. Completely. So thank you for telling that story. Anybody?
Anyone else?
Okay. Okay. We're allowed to be done.